interviews and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 this morning on Between the Covers, Courtney Hameister talks about her new book, Okay, Fine, Whatever, The Year I Went From Being Afraid of Everything to Only Being Afraid of Most Things. And at 11:30, the film show honors the summer season of Silly with performers who bring comedy to TV and film. All of these great KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Literary Arts, presenting civil rights activist DeRay McKesson September 20th at Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall, featuring a conversation on culture, social justice, politics, and progress. Tickets and more information available online at literary-arts.org.
Tune in on Thursday, August 31st at 8 p.m. to celebrate the queer programmers and the queer community of KBOO as part of our 50th anniversary. Emma Lugo of Transpositive will host this special on-air program. You can join us that night at the Queer Community Open House here at KBOO at 20 Southeast Avenue from 7 to 10 p.m. on August 31st. More information about the Queer Community Open House and anniversary programming is available at kboo.fm.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. As the midterm elections approach, the Republican president has further damaged his reputation by admitting to two egregious campaign violations. Despite what he says on Twitter, it was illegal for him to make secret payments to his former lovers to keep them quiet before the election. The FCC says, quote, if any person, including a relative or a friend of the candidate, gives or loans the candidate money for the purpose of influencing any election for federal office, the funds are not considered personal funds of the candidate. Even if they are given to the candidate directly, instead, the gift or loan is considered a contribution from the donor to the campaign, subject to the per election limit and reportable by the campaign. This is true even if the campaign uses the funds for personal living expenses while campaigning, end quote. So, the payments to the model and to the porn star were done secretly in order to preserve his image in the election and were therefore election law violations. As usual, the president has tried to divert attention to his political opponents, in this case claiming that Obama's FEC fine in 2013 was the same thing, but of course it's not. Obama was fined for filing late statements over payments at the tail end of the 2012 campaign. That is not the equivalent of making massive hush money payments and keeping it secret from the FEC and the public. It's exactly why the FEC exists. That's why there are penalties. That's why there's jail time. The guilty pleas by Trump's lawyer and fixer Michael Cohen, I should say former fixer, have established that Trump's denials are lies and that Trump broke the law. There will be no trial other than the upcoming elections this year and 2 years from now. Trump's base doesn't care and will believe anything. But how big is his base compared to that of his detractors? He had some patina as an unknown quality in 2016, aside from his racism, which he made very clear, but now any swing voter can see what he is like. The guilty pleas and convictions, 16 in all, of former Trump associates Cohen and Manafort, which come on top of other guilty pleas and convictions, also mean that they are subject to Special Prosecutor Mueller's offers of a plea bargain. It's that or spend the rest of their lives in prison. That's how bad the penalties are. So Trump may pardon Manafort, he apparently hates Cohen, but that would have powerful effects on the election and would open Manafort up to court testimony. It would open up Trump to impeachment if it causes him to lose enough seats in Congress, if that blue wave happens. Manafort would be no longer able to credibly take the Fifth Amendment rights to avoid self-incrimination if he had been pardoned from those charges and was addressing those charges. So, in sum, this has been Trump's worst week ever. And the Mueller investigation is now sure to find just how extensive Trump's Russian mafia money laundering is. Popcorn sales are up. And I'm very interested. As a transgender person, I have been subjected to Trump's bigotry and racism, his demagoguery, in which he energizes his base by finding people who have less power and beating down on them. This really excites small-minded, dead-hearted people, and it appears that there are millions of those in the United States. So he has his base. How big is his base? That's the question. Press Watch news you're not supposed to know. From Radio Havana, Cuba, U.S. President Donald Trump is reportedly showing renewed interest in a proposal by Blackwater founder Eric Prince to privatize the U.S. war in Afghanistan. Amid Trump's growing frustration about the U.S. military strategy in the war-torn country, the idea envisions replacing military troops with so-called private military contractors or mercenaries who would work for a special U.S. envoy for the war who would report directly to the president, according to NBC News. Speaking for myself, we're talking about a 17-year war that has taken many, many, many lives. Prince's idea. Oh, and have I mentioned that it was based on a lie? Sorry, but the demolition of the Twin Towers and the robot rocket bomb that hit the Pentagon were arranged by Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, to a lesser extent George Bush, who seems to have been a very handy puppet for them, and other people like Wolfowitz, all of whom should be brought into the docket in a careful and ongoing trial. There's been no trial. And convicted for the 9/11 stunt. But returning to the text from Radio Havana, Cuba, Prince's idea, which first surfaced last year during the Trump's Afghanistan strategy review, has raised ethical and security concerns among U.S. military officials. Now, I find that a funny phrase. Ethical and security concerns among U.S. military officials. Anyway, key lawmakers in Congress and members of Trump's national security team, Trump's advisors are worried his impatience with the Afghanistan conflict will cause him to seriously consider proposals like Prince's or abruptly order a complete U.S. withdrawal. In an interview with NBC News, Prince said he believes Trump advisors who oppose his plan are painting as rosy a picture as they can of the situation in Afghanistan. I know he's frustrated, Prince said of the president. Quote, he gave the Pentagon what they wanted, and they haven't delivered, end quote. In August 2017, Trump went against his election campaign promise to pull American forces out of Afghanistan, announcing in a surprise move that Washington would drop a withdrawal timeline and commit even more troops to the country. Most Americans have forgotten about the U.S. war in Afghanistan, the longest war in U.S. history, or have no knowledge of the extent that the Pentagon still operates in the war-torn country. The idea... Miles Honig, who ran for Congress in 2016 as a Green Party candidate, has quoted saying the idea that President Trump wants to privatize the war in Afghanistan is not entirely new. He wants a mercenary army answerable to a viceroy who would report directly to the emperor, that is, the president. That was in an interview with Press TV, that's the Iranian TV. Quoting, we saw something like this in Iraq with Paul Bremer serving as the leading viceroy answerable to President George W. Bush. Many of the soldiers were mercenaries under the leadership of Eric Prince, the brother of Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, end quote. So you can read more on that at Radio Havana. That's radiohc.cu/en if you want to read it in English. And of course, you'll be tracked if you do so. And isn't it nice that you can listen to KBOO radio with an ordinary radio receiver, not be tracked by anything at all. So, speaking of people who should go to prison, men and women incarcerated in prisons across the country declared a nationwide strike earlier this week to draw attention to and demand changes to the conditions they face in the prison system. This is from thescanner.com. It is a quote of the ACLU statement. The nationwide prison strike is scheduled to last from August 21st to September 9th. The organizers of the strike have outlined 10 demands, including the improvement of living conditions in prisons and the restoration of voting rights for currently incarcerated and formerly incarcerated people. And I just want to talk about that for a moment. A lot of people balk at that idea, and they really shouldn't. In a society that isn't utterly degenerate and sick, the number of people in prison is not sufficient to sway elections generally. In a country that is a police state, a mass incarceration Jim Crow state, the number of people is enough to swing elections. And that's exactly why people in prison should be allowed to vote. The franchise should be taken from no one. No voice should be silenced. Otherwise, you don't have a democracy. Returning to the article, ACLU, printed in thescanner.com, Udi Ofer, director of the American Civil Liberties Union Campaign for Smart Justice, released the following statement, quote, "The courageous people who are bringing focused attention to America's system of mass incarceration through the nationwide prison strike deserve our admiration. The ACLU supports the demands of the nationwide prison strike, including the demand for a right to vote. Our country is stronger when people most marginalized and directly impacted by unjust policies raise their voices in protest and demand a different future. The ACLU shares the nationwide prison strike's vision of dismantling mass incarceration, and our campaign for smart justice is working every day across all across America to end mass incarceration. We urge correction officials not to respond with retaliation. Peaceful demonstrators challenging unjust conditions and practices do not merit placing participants into solitary confinement or adding time to their sentences," end quote. Okay, and so the latest on the prison strike, rallies are taking place outside the Atlanta Detention Center, Hyde Correctional Institution in eastern North Carolina, and inside and in front of the Twin Towers Correctional Facility in Los Angeles. According to flyers and videos shared on social media, this is from USA Today, others are planned in Boston and Milwaukee later this week. The list of participating cities is also set to include Seattle, Portland, Sacramento, Los Angeles, San Antonio, I was just thinking about that word Sacramento for a minute, San Antonio, Chicago, Minneapolis, Philadelphia, and Boston, among others. More information on the nationwide prisoner strike starting on Nat Turner Day. This is from Vox.com. The demonstrations mark the anniversary of the bloody uprising at the Attica Corrections Facility in New York. During this time, inmates across the U.S. plan to refuse to work, and in some cases refuse to eat, to draw attention to poor prison conditions and what many view as exploitive labor practices in American correctional facilities. Amani Sawari, a spokesperson for the protests, told the Vox reporter, "Prisoners want to be valued as contributors to our society. Every single field and industry is affected on some level by prisons, from our license plates to the fast food that we eat to the stores that we shop at. So we really need to recognize how we are supporting the prison industrial complex through the dollars that we spend." And speaking for myself, the extent of prison labor really is shocking in the society. There are people being paid $1 an hour, plus an additional $2 for each day. So let's say a nice long day, $14 for a day of fighting forest fires where you're likely to die or shorten your life through smoke inhalation. So there's more on that article in the Vox.com website, so you can find that. More information, jailhouse lawyers speak. They write, "The demands are on top of specific local and regional requests that prisoners are making. For example, Sawari said in South Carolina, they're also focused in getting prisoners the right to vote and, of course, improving conditions in the state that help inspired this year's protests." Skipping ahead, in total, 7 inmates were killed in the riot that started this whole thing, and at least 17 were seriously injured, according to the Associated Press. An inmate told the AP that bodies were literally stacked on top of each other and claimed that prison guards did little to stop the violence between inmates. So the hell that we, the people, have created with our mass incarceration state, which is the worst in the world, period, is facing some resistance. And I have to salute the people who are brave enough to stand up for their rights under that, the worst of conditions. And I have to ask myself, do I have that kind of moxie? Do you? What would you fight for? Under what conditions will you fight back? Now I want to talk about climate change, and I'm going to be inviting your calls. Here in Portland, the smoke, the smog from the forest fires is standing over the city right now. There is no wind. There was no wind just as I came in the doors. It's a choking smoke. If you, like me, love someone who has asthma, that person is suffering and in danger. Everyone's hearts are being affected by this nanoparticulate smoke. Everyone's livers are being affected. Everyone's brains are being affected. People are angrier in traffic, I have noticed. I haven't done a scientific study, but I think you'll probably agree with me, especially when it gets warm and people are breathing in that crap. There, at times, Portland's air has been the fourth worst in the world, competing with places like Beijing and Mumbai. Pardon me. And this is a direct result of climate change. The forests are burning more. They're burning longer. The soot from the forest is going on to the glaciers, going on to Greenland, going on to the ice caps. And when the sun hits that soot on the ice, it melts the ice, makes things worse, makes things warmer, makes the forest burn more. That's the sort of feedback loop that we are in now. And it makes the hurricanes worse. So, hurricane news. Hurricane watch is in effect for Kauai, Leeward, Kauai Mountains, and other places in Hawaii. According to the NOAA, Hurricane Lane remains a major Category 4 storm with maximum sustained winds of 145 miles per hour. This is from last night. Very late last night, Hurricane Lane was located 235 miles south-southwest of Kailua, Kona, Hawaii, and 350 miles south-southeast of Honolulu. Lane is moving northwest at around 7 miles per hour. This general motion is expected to continue with a turn more towards the north, that's towards Hawaii. Expected today through Friday, a turn back to the west is then expected, they write. Regardless of the exact track of the storm, life-threatening impacts are likely over many areas as the strong hurricane makes its closest approach. All individuals in Hawaii are urged not to focus on the exact forecast track or intensity of Lane and be prepared for adjustments in future forecast updates. Although the official forecast does not explicitly indicate Lane's center making landfall over any of the islands, this still could occur. The onset of damaging tropical storm force winds on the Big Island could occur by early Thursday morning, with dangerous hurricane force winds expected in some areas Thursday afternoon or tonight. In Maui County, damaging tropical storm force winds could begin late today, with dangerous hurricane force winds expected today into Friday. On Oahu, damaging tropical storm force winds could begin as early as late Thursday, with dangerous hurricane force winds expected tomorrow. Hurricane warnings may need to be expanded into Kauai County as Lane draws closer. So about this hurricane, it exists possibly, and it definitely is stronger because of global warming. One of the ways that is directly measurable is the fact that with the air generally warmer, it carries more moisture. And that means that it carries more energy. Hurricanes are heat engines. Energy in the atmosphere translates into the strength of the hurricane. Often is not, depending on conditions. It can be otherwise. Sheer winds, which can also be strengthened by the energy in the atmosphere, can knock off the top of the hurricane and make it go away. But the super hurricanes that we had last year are global warming hurricanes. There's no doubt about that. There's a lot to talk about global warming. And the question is, what is to be done about it? How severe are the impacts likely to be? So I'll try to address that with some articles on the topic and with my own comments. I'm going to skip ahead of the hurricane warning for Hawaii. Most of it, just the last bit. Areas of inundation with storm surge flooding will be accentuated by waves. There will be damage to several buildings, mainly near the coast. Sections of near shore escape routes and secondary roads will become weakened or washed out. Major beach erosion with heavy surf will be breaching dunes. And speaking for myself, that last part means that the many, many homeless people in Hawaii are being evacuated inland, and some doubtless will die as they try to stay near to their home. NOAA writes, strong and numerous rip currents will be present. There will be moderate damage to marinas, docks, boardwalks, and piers. There will be several small craft broken away from moorings. So the hurricane is happening in Hawaii. The number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I want to go to an article by Carly Casella in sciencealert.com. She writes, those who deny the reality of anthropogenic climate change often point to the fallibility of climate models, calling those who agree with such estimates alarmists. But far from overstating the effects of a rapidly warming planet, a new report called What Lies Beneath the Understatement of Existential Climate Risk argues that the bulk of climate research has tended to underplay the real risks of climate change. While the report doesn't present any new research, it does draw on previous studies and quotes from leading climate scientists to show that most climate research is based on conservative projections, and I don't mean politically conservative projections and scholarly reticence. The foreword is written by Hans-Joachim Schnellenhuber. I said that wrong. I think that was a Freudian slip. Very Freudian in this case, since he could speak German. Schnellenhuber, not Schnellenhuber, but global warming seems to be getting schneller und schneller. Anyway, Mr. Schnellenhuber, was the head of the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research for 20 years and a senior advisor to Pope Francis, German Chancellor Angela Merkel, and the European Union. The paper itself is primarily focused on reports made by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, which not only provides information for climate policy making around the world, but also influences the public narrative around climate change, and is easier to say than intergovernmental. Returning to the text, the paper itself is primarily focused on reports. Whoops. Skipping ahead, yet because of political and industry pressure, the paper argues that IPCC reports also tend towards reticence and caution, erring on the side of least drama and downplaying more extreme and more damaging outcomes, end quote. Now, speaking for myself, I'm really glad to see this. I've been up here at the mic, and whenever I talk about climate change, I point out that there's an acceleration in the acceleration, or in other words, the climate models that have been presented year after year, and which I've been paying careful attention to, have been, way too conservative. And we are now seeing results that 15 years ago were not expected for 50 or 100 years. So it's good to see that elements of the scientific community are now saying, wait a minute, we're going to have to do, because of the situation, basically because of social science, because of the way people act and react, because people are not, by and large, scientists, the scientists are going to have to take the attitude that we need to take precautions against the worst case, because the worst case is going to wipe us out. Right now, you're breathing carbon monoxide, not just carbon dioxide, but carbon monoxide from the various forest fires in the area. That smog that you're seeing has an invisible component that is, as I mentioned before, damaging your brain, your liver, and your lungs. And it's not just with those particulates. It's not just adding CO2 to the atmosphere when the forests burn. It's also putting out carbon monoxide. And the plumes are being tracked by a satellite. You can look that up online and see where the plumes are right now. But I guarantee that there's more CO in the atmosphere right now around you than there was before the forest fires happened. I guess what I'm saying is the sky has fallen. Not the sky is falling. Returning to the article by Carly Casella in sciencealert.com, in 2001, the IPCC report estimated a sea level rise of 2 millimeters per year. By 2007, however, that estimate was outrun by satellite data, which revealed a sea level rise of 3.3 millimeters per year. Now, speaking for myself, you might say, well, that's just 1.3 millimeters, but it's a huge proportionate rise, and over the long term, it's an egregious error. It's a missed forecast. Returning to the text, in 2007, a similar thing happened. The IPCC report predicted 18 to 59 centimeters of sea level rise by 2100, but just 2 years later, estimates suggested a sea level rise of half a meter to 2 meters by 2100. So I probably need to restate that, since Americans' brains kind of buzz whenever you use centimeters instead of inches. I won't translate it directly, but 18 to 59 centimeters of sea level rise. Um, 59 centimeters would be 0.59 meters. So the second suggestion is 0.50 meters to 2 meters. So that would be a great increase. It would be the high end of that forecast to 4 times as much as that forecast, in other words. So this is, again, a very large error. Returning to the text, despite the mistakes made in previous estimates in 2014, the IPCC actually predicted a smaller sea level rise than 7 years previous. Instead of 59 centimeters, the panel now predicted only 55. A 2017 revised NOAA report shows how far off these predictions were, placing the worst-case scenario at 2.5 meters by 2100 and 5.5 meters by 2150 and 9.7 meters by 2200. Now remember, please, that a meter is around 3 feet, just short of that. So we're talking about 7 feet. We're talking about 18 feet by 2150. We're talking about 30 feet by 2200. These are huge sea level rises. Again, returning to the report, the authors of the new report explained that the conservative and inaccurate IPCC estimates were made because scientists compiling the report could not agree on how much would be added to sea level rise by melting polar ice sheets, and so left out the data altogether to reach some sort of consensus. Science historian Naomi Oreskes calls this consensus by omission, and while it is certainly understandable, Schellnhuber argues it is dangerously misleading, and it's not just sea level rise either. For similar reasons, many climate models do not take into account tipping points and positive feedback loops that could amplify warming, like the release of greenhouse gases from thawing permafrost, the loss of West Antarctic glaciers, and reduced ocean and terrestrial CO2 removal from the atmosphere. And speaking for myself, you can add to that. And I did just mention the effect of soot on glaciers and on the ice caps and on Greenland. That's just one. The feedback effects are why we are in the midst of an extreme climate change emergency now. This is the extreme climate change emergency, and measures must be taken. And as I've mentioned previously, it may be that we have to take measures that include climate engineering. And if so, since that is such a dangerous and desperate thing to do, we need to know how it might happen, who's proposing to do it, who's trying to do it right now. We need some agency in this because it's your life. It's your life. So I'll take a call, the number 503-231-8187, and go to the first caller. You're on the air. It's Ted.
Hi.
Hi.
I like your show, Teresa. A meter is slightly longer than 3 feet, by the way, but that's not what I'm calling about. I'm wondering about this Manafort thing. I don't understand. If he was convicted on charges that didn't relate to his actions with Donald Trump. So if Trump pardons him on those charges, he could still claim Fifth Amendment for things, you know, bad stuff he was up to with Donald Trump.
My understanding is that he can't claim the Fifth Amendment, which is not to incriminate himself on a charge that he has been pardoned for. So as you're saying, if those charges are not directly related, there's a problem with that. But if he's been pardoned and the charges are related to his actions or what he's already been convicted of, then, yeah, that affects him. The other thing that affects him, whether he thinks it's a good idea or not, or whether he's posing that he shan't do this or that he shall, is that he's facing the rest of his life in prison. And Mueller's going to come around and say, let's make a deal. Tell me what you know.
All right.
So pardon or no pardon, that information's out there. And
to take comfort in the idea that Trump won't be able to pardon him, but I don't understand that argument. I've heard it not only from you, but from other people. And it just doesn't seem right to me that there is no comfort in that. He could still claim the fifth, I think. But if anybody else has an opinion, I'd like to hear it. Thank you.
Well, I'd like to hear from a lawyer about that. But
that'd be great.
I think it's too sloppy to say that generally, once pardoned, he won't be able to claim the fifth. And it's also too sloppy to say the other way, because there's overlap in what he was charged with and what...
I thought not. I think his convictions are on things he was up to without Trump's involvement, is my understanding. But anyway, thanks. It's a great show.
Thanks for calling in. Yeah, he's going to want to make a deal. And if Trump pardons him, then, first there's going to be a nationwide mobilization drawing attention to the fact that Trump is acting like a mobster on his own behalf. And I think that there are going to be ways to bring that man into the docket. And he's not going to be able to plead the fifth on everything after he's been pardoned. But we shall see, shan't we? And in the case of Cohen, it's more fraught. Cohen knows very directly. The reason I'm saying that about Manafort is that he was in the campaign, he was with Trump, so he saw stuff. And in the case of Cohen, he was Trump's fixer. I mean, he's part of the whole Trump organization, so he's going to squeal in a big way. So I'll go to the next caller, 503-231-8187. James is on the air.
Hi. I was calling about the sustainability question. I've been studying it in school for years, and I'm an engineer myself, and I've been wondering, like, what at a personal level I can actually do to affect climate change and a positive feedback loop, because I feel like I can't tell enough people, and, you know, when I come into the office, I'm wearing a mask, and everybody freaks out because I look like Bane, I guess. I get a respirator. And nobody's taking it seriously.
Well, I think that what we can do about climate change at this point has to do mostly with collective action, because there has always been a small section of the population who will do everything possible, recycle, bicycle, consume less, and obviously consumption is rising very sharply, and there is no, even after decades of these sorts of individual efforts, there is no mass collective human effort to address this. So there needs to be a mass human collective effort, which means a political effort. So this means that we've got to take down Trump. It means that, I mean, since he is such an enemy of the planet, his, you know, the impeachment porn that they show all day on MSNBC and CNN is relevant to the climate. We have to take down the Republicans one way or another.
Yeah, it just seems like he's completely opposed to the whole thought of climate change. And with the French agreement, I mean, I don't understand where his position is on all this, because the facts are extremely clear and we can put our head under the ground, you know, and I don't really see any way out of this unless the politicians, or we see some types of policy change, because scientists have been touting about this for years and it's only getting worse.
Well, I think you're right. And there is an element of this that we need to pay attention to, and something that Americans don't like to pay attention to, and that is the super rich white elite is going to have bunkers. They're going to have filtered air with oxygen added, and maybe just a little tweak of negative ions, so it feels like the beach in there. They are going to be fine. You know, they're talking about going to Mars. They'll go away. They'll go underground. I mean, that'll be the first thing they'll do in an extreme survival situation. But the super elites don't have to worry about surviving. They will survive. It's the rest of us that are going to die. It's the poor, the old, the infirm, the brown. They're slated to die. This is very much, you know, ignoring the climate is very much a racist action. It's a big middle finger to most of the world's population.
Well, the other thing I've been worried about is that, you know, we're sitting on the highway, right? We're on I-84 going to take I-5 south. Then they're redirecting everybody I-5 north, right? Why is it that they're not taking the construction crews and focusing all their efforts on one project at a time so we can just get it out of the way? Because everybody who's sitting here is putting off, you know, CO2, carbon monoxide, all kind of greenhouse gases. And they're not only doing that, but if you look at it from an economic standpoint, they're also hurting the economy because all these people, they're no longer at work. They're no longer doing their spending at the grocery store. They're not doing any kind of spending. And when they get home, they're so freaking tired because they spent all day in the car that they're not actually going to be going out and eating meals and spending money in the service industry.
Oh, I think you're correct in those statements, except that I would, you know, I think I can argue statistically that Portland's construction delays are an infinitesimal part of the problem right now, as annoying as they are.
Yeah. I think probably the best solution is, I mean, one of the biggest contributors of greenhouse gases seems to be the manufacturing and industrial sectors. I mean, if there was some way we can clean up their output, I don't know that that's necessarily a reasonable idea. I mean, we've done it as much as we can, but yeah, I just don't see any way out of this. I wish there was something I could do at an individual level other than becoming some crazy political activist, of which I have no time for.
Do you have time to die?
Yeah, I guess so, huh? Yeah, well, I got to do something.
Thanks for your call. Number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. I was just saying that the predictions that are so criticized by the right wing as being alarmist are actually the opposite. They're far too conservative, and they are a direct result. I mean, what you're experiencing right now is a direct result of the inaction that is brought about by that sort of attitude that the Trump base swallows so well. It makes me think about fascism, but I don't think I'll go into that right now. But fascism definitely affects fascism with its enthusiasm for centralized power, power for power's sake, will keep the power where it's at with the oil industries and associated industries, and will change nothing simply because it affects short-term profits. And Naomi Klein has pointed out that we have to change the whole game. This requires a revolution because the oil industry, the financiers who back them, the politicians who are lavishly paid by them, have their game. Like I said, they have their bunkers, or the prospect of the bunkers. They will make them soon enough. And that's already true in a lot of ways. For example, if you get a high-end car, if you drop upwards of $60,000 on a car, $200,000 like the super elite can afford. It comes with a filter system. It's very nice. Just keep the blower going, and it'll draw it through that nice carbon-activated filter, and you won't be suffering from the pollution that everyone else is breathing and that you are putting out. Number to call, 503-231-8187, so I'll go to the next caller. Liz is on the air.
Yes. Thank you for your program. I just wanted to say that us in Oregon, it seems to me the most important thing we can do to affect climate change positively is to vote for Kate Brown and work for Kate Brown, because the alternative is for the Kalama, you know, methane thing and the pipeline. And so that's my thought today.
Yeah, it's I can't argue much with you. I could start ranting about the DNC and their absolute, you know, umbilical cord to corporate rule. But
well,
yeah, Kate Brown
that,
is
none of that matters. We got to have Kate. I know what you're saying, and I feel that way too. But we have to have Kate Brown, not the alternative. We have to.
You're right, but I would say that it does matter because they will absolutely betray us time and again. Oh, you still there? Okay.
Yeah, but so far, you know, that's the best alternative.
Okay.
Okay. All right, that's it. Thank you.
Thanks for calling in. Number to call, 503-231-8187. And I'll go to the next caller. Brian's on the air.
Hey.
Hey.
Morning, Teresa. Hey, I think I remember you talking a couple of months ago about the bugs and the insects.
Yeah.
So I thought maybe we could have a monthly bug report.
Entomology report. I like that. That's something worth paying attention to.
It is. So a little bit of a report here for 30 seconds. I drive for a living, and all this hot summer and all this time, hardly any bugs on the windshield at all.
Yeah, that's one way to count them, and I think everyone's experiencing that.
Yeah, and leaving the doors open at night to cool off, no bugs come in, no nothing. They're hiding somewhere, and of course, you know, the ripple effect on that.
Yeah, the most immediate ripple effect is on the birds that eat them.
Yeah, so let's vote for the bugs.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, man.
Thanks, I'm pro-bug. I'll put up with being annoyed, you know. Can I quantify it? I'll take 20 mosquito bites this year for... No, you can't do that. All right, go to the next caller. Our number to call, 503-231-8187. We've been talking about Trump, Cohen, Manafort, Russiagate, and been talking about climate. And Harry's on the air.
Greetings, Teresa, and thank you for taking my call. One thing I noticed with the smoke here in the Portland area, how come the mayor didn't call an emergency and tell everyone to stay off the roads? Since the smoke is keeping everything down, and with the cars also putting out emissions, could make things worse for people who are breathing that. So I'm surprised they just didn't say stay at home for the next day or two and to help the air quality.
I guess that kind of impinges on what I was saying earlier about the bunkers. Which I could generalize more to say that the politicians and the political system that we have right now ensures that those who are in power are answerable to those with the most power. And those with the most power would really prefer that you go out and choke half to death on your bicycle, car, or on foot, or in a bus, and get to work and make that short-term profit happen.
Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, the smoke was only here for really bad for 3 days. For 3 or 4 days, they could have closed everything down, told everyone to stay off the freeways or whatever.
I really agree. It should have happened.
Yeah. The next thing is a lot of the smoke that's coming from the Portland area is coming down the gorge. And I didn't realize they were talking about the fires in eastern Washington. And that's in Canada, that's where the smoke is coming from. Could you imagine in eastern Washington they have that nuclear dump? What's it called?
Hanford.
The nuclear dump in eastern Washington.
Hanford Nuclear Reservation.
The Hanford Nuclear Reservation, yes. Could you imagine if some of that stuff caught fire? Guess where the radiation going up in the air will come? It'll come right toward us in Portland.
Well, I hate to say this, but right now there's a sinkhole in one of the tanks that's visible from the air.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I haven't heard that about that one.
I think that Hanford generally doesn't get a lot of coverage. I'm thankful to people like Mimi German for, you know, taking the effort to make sure that it gets out to the press.
Yeah, and if there's a major leak, it gets into the Columbia River and comes right down to us.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for taking my call.
Thanks for calling in. I was just looking up more information about the pardon. Article in Vox says if the president issues a pardon in order to influence a witness and impede the investigation, that would also be a further act of obstruction. Although he has the legal authority to pardon, he cannot use that power to commit another crime. A defendant in, say, a fraud case also has the power to shred documents, but doing so with the intent to shield those documents from pending an investigation would be criminal obstruction. So there are many, many aspects to the Manafort case. You know, the way he's talking about, the way Trump's talking about Manafort, I would be surprised if he doesn't pardon him. But it'll be interesting to see how that works out. Number to call, 503-231-8187. I'll go to the next caller. Casey's on the air.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. It seems like a lot of people focus on the surface level. What can we do right at this moment in time? But honestly, in my opinion, it's the head of the problem. It's the politicians. It's the money that's backing these ever-present issues that we're facing with the earth, with humanity, and the greed. And I'm wondering why there isn't more of a conservative effort with, you know, the Elon Musk, the Bezos, the people that have you know, resources to make a big difference, to go after these politicians who are continuing to destroy our planet and our people. Every single one of them is dirty. And with enough money and enough resources, there's ways to impeach and throw out these politicians that are creating this continual problem. And I'm just wondering, you know, in the quote-unquote elitist group of people that actually care about this earth and care about the environment, why isn't there more of a push to really start putting pressure on the politicians that are the ones that are continuing to create this problem?
I think it's, well, you know, my immediate answer is that bunker thing. Do you remember the, have you seen the old movie Dr. Strangelove?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you remember the discussion between Peter Carrick, well, of course, Peter Sellers did so many characters, but between Peter Sellers' Dr. Strangelove character, Peter Sellers' president character, let's see, I can't remember who plays all the parts, but there's a discussion about bunkers and just how delightful they could be in their imagination. Mm-hmm. It goes on. That's, I keep thinking about that when this comes up. I mean, the
exactly.
elites, it's going to be us that get it. The elites are going to be fine.
Yep.
I mean, their lives will be somewhat degraded.
Exactly. And a caller touched on it briefly earlier, you know, talking about Kate Brown. And it does come down a lot to a local level in politics because, you know, at the local level, we can make a little bit more of a difference than we can on a national level, considering politics, you know.
Yeah, I agree. I guess I'm just cautious to say, you know, because of the stance that I've continually taken and because of the revolution I want, it's kind of hard to say, yeah, the Democrats, they have less blood on their hands.
No, exactly. And it's the whole Democrat-Republican issue is it's not even real, you know. It's really the money and where's the money going and who's in whose pockets, because there's Democrats in Republicans' pockets. There's Republicans in Democrats' pockets. So to be honest with you, the whole Democrat-Republic thing has nothing to do with saving this earth. It's really putting the money and the resources into getting these people out of power who are continuing to destroy our planet.
Right, and I think my tiny part is to come on to our community radio station and point to articles like the one I was just reading from that is saying that these careful scientific estimates have been way too conservative. Not because, in this case, not because of a political attitude, but just because, you know, they're scientists and they're used to talking to other scientists.
Yep.
And we're facing an extreme emergency, and so they're starting to wake up to that. Hey, thanks very much for calling
in. Thank you much.
Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. 8187. Following on the very interesting point that previous caller pointed out about the pardons, and I think that my response to that was pretty sloppy, actually, and so I'm trying to get back up to speed. Going back to that Vox article, the case of a preemptive pardon, that is one issued before conviction, is different. The scope of the person's Fifth Amendment rights would depend on the scope of the pardon. If for only specific offenses, the person would retain Fifth Amendment rights for other offenses, which is what the caller was saying, basically. Even after a pardon, people who Mueller wants testimony from will still be negotiating for immunity grants. So that's interesting. So it's complex, but the first reaction that will occur if Trump pardons Manafort is that he will pay for it politically, because it's just so sleazy. I mean, it's just... There has got to be an unbearable level of sleaziness, and not for his base. Certainly, they don't. It's like he said, he could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue, but his base is at most 25 to 30% of the general population, at the most. And mobilizing the rest is difficult. This is why apartheid, and this is why fascism can rule. It's not that fascism requires a majority. Quite the opposite. It requires a motivated and rewarded minority, and that is where we are going. That is how dangerous these times are, that we are headed towards a fascist apartheid state. Well, more of an apartheid state, I suppose, which is, I want to say it's hard to imagine, but I guess it's not really. Number to call, 503-231-8187, and I'll go to the next caller. Bill's on the air.
Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
Great show as ever. First of all, this is the climate is not a political problem. People like ExxonMobil have spent the last couple of decades in serious propaganda mode. That's why the climate change is even a discussion. And I want to know if we, the people, can storm the gates and seize the assets of someone like ExxonMobil in order to begin to repair this mess?
It seems, you know, when the powerful have got their mojo going, they seem unapproachable. But the Stasi headquarters was raided. You know, the great fascists have been overthrown, and sometimes it's taken invasions and bombs, and other times the people have simply won out. So it can be done. I just kind of want to point out how close those bunkers are, really. I mean, I say bunkers and I say underground, but for the moment, I think that's a bit of an exaggeration. Actually, those big skyscrapers that you can't get into, they're filtered. There's no smog in there.
Oh, no. If you can afford it, you could probably weather the first phase of this storm.
Yeah, so
there's going to be, but then by the time you get to the second phase, your money is no longer going to be valid. You're going to have true power.
Yeah, then, I mean, you know, that's where it's heading, is that only the super elite will be able to survive this stuff, especially with the hothouse earth scenario. And I find it pretty offensive to think that the progeny of these, well, offensive fascists will be the ones who get to live. That alone is enough to motivate me to do what I can. And as long as I have you on the air, let me ask you, how did you find out about KBOO Radio?
Oh, geez. I moved to Portland in 88 and came from the East Coast WBAI territory, and I was told about KBOO before I came to town.
So it was word of mouth.
Yes, and I've been a member pretty much ever since.
Okay, thanks for that. We need to find out that sort of thing because, I mean, obviously, getting the word out via your community radio and online via your community radio is a huge part of how we're going to fight back on this and getting a popular awareness. I mean, there's got to be a we. We can identify a they to some extent. You know, the Trump's base certainly can't. The rest of us can. We can identify who's doing this to us, but we also have to think about, we also have to think in solidarity with each other. And that means breaking down some really important barriers, not just class, but we have to break down whiteness, which is a fraud for all involved and a horror for everyone who doesn't get the benefits of it. Thanks very much for your call. 503-231-8187. The time is 9:52. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up at 10 o'clock, it's going to be Air Cascadia. I have a little piece of paper that tells me exactly what's on and when. Ah, here we go. And that's Chris Andre doing her thing at 10:15. It's going to be Flash Points with Dennis Bernstein. Always good. At 11, Between the Covers, Courtney Hamister talks about her new book. Okay, fine, whatever. The year I went from being afraid of everything to only being afraid of most things. I love that title. And 11:30, The Film Show honors the summer season of Silly with performers who bring comedy to TV and film. Laugh if you can, since, as you know, we've gone from whooping cranes to whooping cough around here. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kbo.fm and click on Donate, or you can just watch the world die. Donator will shoot this dog. I never know what to say. I think that there's a good possibility that community radio membership is about to expand because whenever the crisis gets bad enough, whenever the wars start drafting us all, well, then people join the community radio station, and rightly so, rightly so. Number to call, 503-231-8187. And Sam's on the air.
Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
So a conspiracy thing. This Lanny Davis that everyone's all a Twitter about because he's Cohen's lawyer,
uh-huh.
Is that the same Lanny Davis that was pimping for Hillary Clinton in Honduras when they overthrew the duly elected government of Zelaya?
I don't know. I mixed him up the other day with Lanny Sinkin, and my partner called me out on it. So that's one I can't answer right away. I'll have to look it up online real quick, and I don't think that I will right now.
No, don't bother right now. It's just we got to be aware of these things because, you know, the collective memory is like about 3 minutes long. And I remember Lanny Davis's name being tossed around. He was defending Hillary Clinton, and she was defending her stance against Zelaya.
Yeah, well, Clinton's not in the White House right now, so I'm going to focus down on Trump. And thank you very much for your call. And I'm going to call 503-231-8187 and go to the next caller. And that's Sunny. Hi, Sunny.
Oh, good morning. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
You know, I didn't vote for Trump or Hillary,
and Hillary was the winner of the popular vote.
Yeah.
And so in a tradition of First Nation freedom, she is the lady president. She didn't.
Yeah, so was Gore.
She didn't get, yeah, that's right. So she didn't get into the White House and all that kind of stuff. The thing is, here is a question, and I don't understand. Didn't the investigation on Trump come out of a dossier that the Hillarys obtained, which was fraudulent, and the FBI and the Justice Department or whatever recognized early on that it was a fraudulent dossier from a guy?
Are you talking about the Steele dossier?
Huh?
Talking about the Steele dossier?
Yeah, yeah. And so, like, my
okay, so that
is,
was wait, opposition wait. Research in the Republican Party, which was bought by the Democrats. And Steele is opposition research for hire. He has investigated anyone he's paid to investigate. I would say he's pretty good at it. And there's, you know, most of what he reported is going to be correct, and a huge portion of it. You know, by scientific standards, it would be invalid, but this is political research. He goes to dig dirt. He gets what dirt he can find. Not all of the dirt that he finds is valid and actual dirt and belonging to the person that he throws the dirt on. So it's a little complex, but it's understandable.
But the question is, too, and I appreciate your illumination on that. So if the Hillary camp was doing what all the politicians are doing, and I am not supporting Trump at all, I think Trump is way beyond nightmare proportions. The whole situation is just, oh gosh. But anyway, don't they always just go around digging dirt up on each other all the time? And aren't there components of the way the FBI has behaved in this and other ways, even towards Trump, a high level member of, you know, the money? Isn't it disturbing, some of the aspects that have occurred? And it does appear, and I'm not supporting him. I'm totally neutral. I'm a grape. I'm red and blue and everything. But there are aspects and components of the way that Manafort was held, and I don't know. I haven't seen his appearance. But there are aspects of torture that have been applied to him, such as solitary confinement and other things. Don't we need to be concerned about the whole spectrum?
Well, I think we do, and we've always been concerned about the abuse of solitary confinement here at KBOO, and that still applies. The FBI is not your friend. COINTELPRO is real. Fox Mulder and Dana Scully are fictional. They're not your friend. And they do political enforcement in a huge way and always have. So that's, I think you're right. That's something that you have to keep in mind about this whole thing, that the system is corrupt. And, you know, I guess that's come up several times during this program. We need to shift the other way, even though the way we're shifting still heads, you know, still aims us towards corrupt parties, towards the elite hegemony and the functionally racist elite hegemony of corporate rule. Well, I hear the music, which is a subtle way of telling me I've yakked all the way through this hour and run out of time. So you've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Hope that you will stay tuned for Air Cascadia and the ensuing programs. You're listening to our beautiful red and white Eiffel Tower on the Hill at 90.7 FM, 25,000 watts that we all collectively are paying for. Thank you very much. Please join. And you could be listening to us at KBOO.FM that way as well. And you could be listening to us anywhere. You could be listening to us in all the ships at sea.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the August OMSI After Dark, featuring Insexuality, ultrasonic love songs, and death dances from the Panamanian rainforest on Wednesday, August 29th at 7:30 p.m. at OMSI in Portland. What does the world sound like to an insect or a bat? You can find out by exploring the insect music you've never heard before in surround sound under the Panamanian stars. Again, that's OMSI After Dark, featuring Insexuality, ultrasonic love songs, and death dances from the Panamanian rainforest on Wednesday, August 29th at 7:30 p.m. at the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry, 1945 Southeast Water Avenue in Portland. This is a 21 and over event. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.